They tried to obfuscate the election. Irrefutable proof that Obama was sedacious.
He was sedacious? Poor Obama.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Here I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. And I think it will be thrilling. We'll see. Desi Doyen, are they standing by?
Yes, they are.
They are. Digby and Driftglass are standing by, so let's jump right in. David Kurtz at TPM's Morning Memo, he has it right as usual today in his summary on Wednesday of the latest in the Jeffrey Epstein scandal, which isn't really a Jeffrey Epstein scandal at all. It is now officially a Donald Trump scandal, as he is the one who originally promised to release the records from the DOJ investigation and indictment of the late pedophile sex trafficker, financier and years-long close personal friend of Donald Trump. And Trump is now the one who is blocking the release of those records. As Kurt summarized on Wednesday, as scandalous and horrible as Jeffrey Epstein's crimes were, that's not what's giving the story legs or Democrats political leverage in this crazy moment. It's the conspiracy-addled MAGA backlash against President Trump and Attorney General Pam Bondi that is undergirding the politics of this. Without that fundamental weak spot, this story probably follows the familiar track of so many other would-be scandals of the Trump era. In fact, it had been following that trajectory for years until MAGA's barking dog catches car epiphany. The madcap events of Tuesday, Kurtz writes, showed that the administration is still trying to placate the pressure from the right while protecting Trump from whatever the investigative files may contain. In a bizarre and troubling move, Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, Trump's former personal criminal defense lawyer, announced that he is seeking a meeting with imprisoned Epstein accomplice Ghislaine Maxwell. The astounding conceit of Blanche's announcement was that he was finally going to get to the bottom of this whole thing. Another way, of course, of feeding the MAGA conspiracists. Not to get left behind, the House Oversight Committee voted to move to subpoena Maxwell for testimony. That yesterday, before Speaker Mike Johnson announced that he was shutting down the House entirely early this week for the August recess, as it had become impossible for Republicans to move forward without Democrats and Republican House members demanding a vote on a non-binding resolution asking the DOJ to release the Epstein files. Just before air, by the way, the House Oversight Committee made it official. She will, I guess, testify from prison in Florida. Now, after all of this came up yesterday, Maxwell's lawyer released a statement declaring, quote, "We are grateful to President Trump for his commitment to uncovering the truth in this case." Again, that was the attorney of Epstein's convicted partner in pedophiling, Ghislaine Maxwell, who is serving 20 years in jail for her part in the years-long crimes, including recruiting and grooming middle school and high school girls for the sexual pleasure of Epstein and, well, let's just say others for the moment. Two federal judges in Manhattan ordered the Trump administration to provide much more factual and legal bases for unsealing grand jury transcripts from the prosecutions of Epstein and Maxwell, as Trump bizarrely called for in an apparent attempt to distract from the fact that he was blocking hundreds of thousands of pages of investigative documents and videos, etc., from being released, calling instead for the grand jury testimony that no one has been asking for. And later, on Wednesday, a federal court in Florida rejected the administration's motion to release grand jury documents in the case down there. And an agitated President Trump blamed anyone and everyone, trying to pivot to false and frankly bizarre and unintelligible claims made on Monday by his Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, that Democrats, including Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, engaged in a, quote, treasonous coup in 2016 in the election that Donald Trump actually won. Here is a very short soundbite or two from Trump in the Oval Office on Tuesday talking about that treasonous coup.
The witch hunt that you should be talking about is they caught President Obama absolutely cold. They tried to steal the election. They tried to obfuscate the election. Now, we found absolute, this isn't like evidence or this is like proof, irrefutable proof that Obama was sedacious.
So sedacious as he was, later on Tuesday, speaking to Republicans in the White House, Trump had a directive underscoring his seeming desperation to change the topic as his own MAGA supporters have been growing seemingly more irate about all of this, not the treasonous coup, but about the Epstein files. More and more irate about it by the day.
And remember, don't let them forget, it's so important, Obama cheated on the election. And we have it cold, hard, blue, and it's getting even more so because the stuff that's coming in is not even believable. So, and you should mention that every time they give you a question that's not appropriate, just say, oh, by the way, Obama cheated on the election.
There you go. That's what they should be talking about, because they've got it hard and blue. Well, there have been just a few things that have happened over the past month since we last spoke with our longtime OG blogger pals, Digby and Driftglass, on the broadcast. The explosion of Donald Trump's Jeffrey Epstein problem is just one of them. We haven't devoted a whole lot of time to that on this program, as it has been so quickly changing and frankly includes so many stupid, if often hilarious, tangents that it's been difficult to keep up with. Plus, with others covering it elsewhere, we've chosen to focus on the stuff not being covered that needs more coverage. But today, because it really does not seem to be going away anytime soon, despite Speaker Johnson, who last week promised transparency for the American people when calling for everything to be released to the public, when he was asked about the Epstein files, that was last week. And then this week he recessed Congress until September to avoid doing exactly that, to avoid his own members calling for a vote, asking the DOJ pretty please to release those files. And in the meantime, since this story really does seem to be damaging Donald Trump, both politically and psychologically, well, let's get distracted a bit by the Epstein case and a few other related and or unrelated matters with smart and or not so smart insights from two of our favorite broadcast roundtablers. Joining us once again today is Heather Digby Parton. She is the award-winning columnist and proprietor of the much beloved Digby's Hullabaloo blog. And from deep in the heart of what he describes as flyover country, Illinois, it is the man known largely as just Driftglass, but occasionally as just Bill, who co-hosts the much beloved weekly Professional Left podcast. All right, it seems both forever and just about 10 minutes ago, guys, since we spoke with you last, as time has lost all meaning in the Trump era. But welcome back. It's great to have you both back.
Good to be here.
Let me start, as usual, with Digby. We've got to start with the continuing fallout from the Epstein story today, since I guess we won't be discussing it at all over the next month, with Congress adjourned until September, right? I have to ask this. How is any of this, Heather, actually a story at all? How can it be that MAGA did not already know long ago that Trump is at the heart of this story, since frankly he's, you know, pretty much the only one that we have photos and videos of Epstein palling around with for so many years? Did they not know before the last week or two that he was implicated in all of this?
Well, apparently not. I mean, they seem to, you know, they certainly haven't shown this stuff on Fox. You don't see the, you know, the endless kind of repetition of Trump and Epstein at that party with, who was it, the Oakland Raider cheerleaders or something that were there, and Trump just, the white man's overbite and the whole thing. It's just really a gross, it's a gross sort of display between the two of them. And now there's some new stuff out where he's at, they're at a Victoria's Secret, you know, runway show,
and various,
so this whole thing. And of course, we already knew this stuff about, you know, Trump. I mean, look, the Access Hollywood tape, they all know about that. I mean, that should be enough.
Do they just not believe this is a thing, that it's somehow been fake news all along, that Trump had nothing to do with the guy who he claimed was his best friend years ago and loved young girls as much as he did?
First of all, this is a cult that we're dealing with. I mean, the people who are obsessed with the Epstein files are either just the craven careerists, like, you know, the influencers like Bannon and Laura Loomer and the rest, who are kind of kicking up the base. They're getting them excited, and that's how they make their money, and that's how they, you know, this is what they do for a living. But for the hardcore MAGA base that is just, you know, completely obsessed with Epstein, this goes back to QAnon. QAnon was essentially a pedophile conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. It is about a global pedophile ring led by Hillary Clinton and, you know, her ilk. And I mean, there's some really gross stuff. I mean, if you want to know the grossest QAnon stuff, you know, look up Frazzle Drip. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Don't do it if you have, you know.
I'm not going to do it.
Don't do it unless if you have don't have a strong stomach. But this is just the kind of stuff that they have been spewing now for the last 8 years or 10 years, really. Now, so they believed in this pedophile cabal that the deep state run by these pedophiles is running the world. I mean, that's QAnon. That is the absolute basis of QAnon.
Right.
It's a pedophile thing. And then you had Pizzagate and you had all that. But I'm telling you, when Epstein came along, it blew their minds. I mean, this was 2019. I don't think they'd known about Epstein much before. None of us really had. I mean, we knew it. We were vaguely aware. In 2019, when the feds, and this was under Trump, you know, arrested Epstein, and then he died, you know, kind of under dubious circumstances in jail, they electrified the QAnon people, because here you had an actual pedophile. But in their minds, I don't know if they didn't know that Trump was best friends with Epstein for 15 years, or if they just assumed this was, you know, going to reveal all, and it was going to be anybody but Trump, whatever they're thinking.
Which is just drift glass. I mean, do you have any explanation for how it can be that MAGA did not know that Trump himself would be at the center of this? And is this all really as painfully and stupidly obvious as it seems, that the reason that Trump will not release the Epstein files is because he is in the Epstein files?
Yeah. Have you ever tried to talk a fundamentalist out of their belief in the literal and inerrant word of God being the Bible? You can stack up all the theologians you want. You can bring John Fugelsang along. My wife is a theology graduate from Harvard.
Uh-huh.
There are just thousands of books detailing that the Bible is not literal. It's not inerrant. Here's how and why it was written. Here are the details. Here's the history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't dent their belief at all, because without their belief, they're nothing. They have no identity. They spiral out of control. There's no there other than faith in that belief. Same is true for these people. When we call them reprogrammable meatbags on the professional left, we mean the first part and the second part. We are all meatbags, are we not? Yes, we are. But they are completely reprogrammable. And once you sort of get that wrap your mind around the fact that they can just be told anything. But this is a distinction we tried to make on our podcast, which is there's a difference between all the other lies and the load-bearing lie. All the other lies and the load-bearing conspiracy, the one that you can't knock down without destroying everything. And this belief in a global pedophile ring is, it's not perfect analogy, but it's close to the, you know, Iraq has WMD, mm-hmm. and it's a fact, and we have the evidence, and we're going in, and we're all going to cheer, and George Bush is a genius. Once that got knocked down, everything else started to fall apart. Then there was like willing to see that, oh, he's incompetent. He's being led around by the nose. Katrina knocked it down further. But once a load-bearing lie is knocked down, and they've been through this before many, many times. They've had all their load-bearing lies knocked down, and they're just not going to let this one go.
Well, is this the load-bearing lie that is breaking them? Because if they, you know, if you can't convince a fundamentalist of anything, you can't convince MAGA of anything. But here, MAGA finally seems to be turning on Donald Trump. No,
they need a bigger conspiracy. They need, and this is where they are breaking bad with Donald Trump, because no other conspiracy will do. The Obama treason conspiracy will not do. The rest of the crap that they're trolling out, chumming the water, trying to get them away from this thing, won't do. This is what you promised us. This is the skeleton key that unlocks everything. This is the conspiracy theory that explains everything. And you're taking it away from us and saying, and you're not giving us one answer. We're very simple folk. We want one answer. You're giving us five different lies that don't agree with each other in the same sentence.
So,
and that makes their little brains go, I don't know what to do. So they run to the nearest safe place, which is, I believe in Donald Trump, everybody shut up. But a bunch of them also run away. Different ones run away too. I was promised this and I don't know what's going on and I'm starting to get scared. So...
Well, and a lot of them are not running away. They are turning back to Trump and saying, you have to be a part of this if you're unwilling to.
Yes.
I mean, this really does seem to be turning a page for them. We'll see if you're right. It really does seem to be sort of a Katrina moment.
It's stupid Watergate. I mean, you know, this is what we're calling it anyway. It's stupid Watergate. This is the moment when, I forget the name of the first name of the congressman, Hogan, started crying about my president. I heard him on tape say this thing. And up until that moment, he believed that Richard Nixon was innocent and there was some other explanation for it. And once he heard the tape, he couldn't face it anymore. They're approaching that moment in this stupid Watergate.
Here was House Speaker Mike Johnson on a right-wing podcast just last week when he was asked about releasing the Epstein files.
I'm for transparency. We're intellectually consistent in this. Look, Reagan used to tell us we should trust the American people. I believe in that principle. I know President Trump does as well, and I trust him. I mean, he put together a team of his choosing, and they're doing a great job. It's a very delicate subject, but we should put everything out there and let the people decide it.
So that was last week. He believes in, you know, transparency, maximum transparency, put everything out there.
That was then. This is now.
Apparently, because on, Monday, he realized, well, maybe we shouldn't do that. By Tuesday, he was shutting down Congress until September because claiming that they couldn't do anything without people, both Republicans and Democrats, calling for a vote to turn over the Epstein files. So, Heather, will that make any difference? Will MAGA taking a break for a month make this go away? Or is this now have actual legs that are going to keep going?
I think it's a mistake. I think they made a mistake in doing that, because I think that just makes it even more mysterious. What's going on? What are they covering up? Mm. What you have to realize about this is that these people, I know it seems unbelievable, they thought Donald Trump was this big crusader for truth who was going to reveal all about the deep state and all the, you know, the horrible, the cabal, the everything. He was going to be the guy who's going to release all the information, radical transparency. He was going to, I mean, I laugh when I hear that when you're talking about him, right? I mean, this is a guy with more secrets. In fact, you know, he said to Epstein in that birthday book that the Wall Street Journal revealed last week, you know, about, you know, that we have our secrets. Mm-hmm.
that may every day be another wonderful secret.
Yeah. I mean, the guy is a complete, you know, we know how, you know, dishonest and everything is, but these people seem to have bought, they bought into it. It's like Driftglass says, this is their fundamentalist dogma, mm-hmm. is that Donald Trump is this hero that was going to do that. So when you're looking at what is clearly a cover up, I mean, and now Johnson just, you know, said, okay, we're going home. We can't possibly talk about this anymore. Everybody get out of here. I think they're going to be very disappointed because they're going to go home and they're going to have to see their constituents. That's what you do in the August recess. You go to state fairs and have town halls and do all that stuff. And they're all going to be asking about the Epstein files. And I just think that this is, you know, this has gotten away from them. Yeah. Now, you know, I'm not going to make any predictions because, you know, with Donald Trump, who knows? And he's always had, you know, this amazing survivability, right? I mean, he's kind of like some kind of a feral creature who just, you know, he's like cockroach or something, you know, yeah. Who just kind of lives no matter what. But this one is different. And it does seem to have, it's far more members of his own cult are concerned about this and are following it and are looking at him differently than the rest of us who all know that, you know, that we've known forever and what this was about, right? I mean, Donald Trump and young girls say it ain't so. Oh my God, no.
And I think that you both sort of collectively hit it an excellent point here, that because you're right, this does hit at Donald Trump's strong point, that he's going to be the one to expose the truth, and then he's the one pulling the punches, just as we saw with George W. Bush. His strong point was, oh, he's going to keep us all safe. And then you see, you know, bodies floating down the street in New Orleans, and that undid that particular idea. So this really could turn that idea upside down. And it seems like you're both arguing, if I'm understanding correctly, that this could be, really could make a difference, turn a page in his support from the MAGA folks. Am I understanding that right from both of you?
I think so. It's certainly possible. Yeah, it's certainly possible. Look, one thing to remember here, everybody needs to keep something in mind. Donald Trump is a lame duck president. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether we, you know, he doesn't act like it and, oh, you know, they're all, oh, what a great winning first 6 months. He's been incredibly successful, blah, blah, blah. The truth is that he's a lame duck president. So there's a lot of positioning going on within MAGA world, within the Republican establishment, the 2028 hopefuls, and all of this. So, you know, finding the sort of weak spots in MAGA and in the establishment and trying to manipulate that, this is what's starting. This is the beginning of that new positioning among the Republicans. So that is vulnerable for Trump in a way he wasn't in his first term. And I think that this is new. And he's not, by the way, you haven't mentioned this, Trump ain't handling it, okay? I mean, the guy is not looking good in this. As far as I'm concerned, he looks like he's about to just explode every time he goes on camera.
Yeah.
So that's something, too.
I did mention for. That this has been politically and psychologically damaging, clearly, yes. to him. And there's some other topics I want to get to with you guys as well. But with all of that said, while I would love to see the files released because it will embarrass Donald Trump and all of that, the question remains in my head, should the Epstein files be released? And Driftglass, that may or may not be a trick question. I'll share my thoughts on it in a moment, but I would love to get yours.
I don't know what's in them. I don't know what's there. I don't know how many innocent people would be damaged by it. I do know that they are in the hands of people who don't care about anything like that. So the question is a little bit moot. They're in the hands of people who are going to flag, who are already in the business of flagging every record that mentions Donald Trump for what, I don't know, I assume erasure or alteration.
It was, I should note, Dick Durbin has, Senator Dick Durbin has said that apparently 1,000 was it, do I have that right? 1,000
yes,
DOJ officials were
plus
tasked,
plus FBI from the New York office,
tasked with reading about 100,000 pages of these documents and flagging anywhere that Donald Trump was referred to.
Yep, and they're not qualified to do that. They're not qualified to handle FOIA requests or understand sensitive testimony or underage anything. So we've dumped the Watergate tape, so to speak, into the hands of incompetent jackals who are highly motivated to do terrible things or destroy them or whatever. It's too late to just to burn the tapes. And that's the difference, because they said there were tapes. They said there was a record. They said there was a file. And they cannot walk that back, so they have to invent something. So I think that this sort of thing should be aired publicly. And if we lived in a different timeline with healthy people, there'd be hearings, and we'd have find out what the hell happened. And everyone who is actually guilty would be put before the bar and punished to the full extent of the law.
But there wouldn't be, you wouldn't just release their names willy-nilly. No, you would either investigate and bring charges against them, or you would not name them. You would not release these files with names of potentially innocent people in them.
Well, they could be redacted, but remember, when you go in to redact names of victims, you can also redact other names,
right,
like Donald Trump, or highlight Democrats that might be in the list. So
and I know that there's
every... In every redaction hides a conspiracy of what are you hiding? What's going on? Because we've already built a conspiracy machine that is not going away. And I just advise all my Democratic friends and all my liberal friends, because here at the local level on local MAGA is screaming about Obama treason and they're all in on Hillary Clinton rigged the election. They're desperate to bring that away. And the answer to that is, that's very interesting. Have you heard about the Epstein files? The answer to every single question is a noun and a verb and the Epstein files. That's its utility at the moment. It's not fair. It's not right. It feels dirty, and it is. And there are innocent people who are harmed horribly by this. But unfortunately, we don't live in a timeline where that could be adjudicated fairly. It's now a weapon. It's now a club in our hands, and we need to beat Donald Trump to his knees with it.
Driftglass, I'm sorry, Digby, your thoughts. Should these files actually be released as both Republicans in Congress, MAGA folks in Congress, and yes, Democrats have been calling for?
Well, I mean, theoretically, yes. And for all the reasons that you guys have just been talking about, the idea of, you know, people being smeared by guilt by association in ways that, you know, isn't right. I mean, all of that is kind of, you know, terrifying in a way, because this is more of, you know, the degradation of our, you know, the rule of law and our norms and everything else. But having said that, we are in an era where it's basically a matter of survival, I think. And so, yes, go ahead, let the chips fall where they may. And let's just lay it all out there. Because you and I mean, those of us who are listening here, we know that this is not a global pedophile cabal that we're dealing with. But we are dealing with a group of very, very powerful men who were involved with someone who was trafficking minors. Now, there's been a trial on this. Epstein was tried earlier and got a sweetheart deal from Acosta, he was then the U.S. attorney in Florida and became the Secretary of HHS and had to resign over this.
Secretary of Labor, under Trump.
And then we had, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell had a trial, and many of the victims of it testified. And so, you know, this is real. This is not some thing that has been made up. This is a thing that actually happened, and there were very powerful people who were involved, and it's all very weird.
But there's a bunch
of finance weirdness in this. There's a bunch of money exchanging hands among people. Nobody could ever figure out what Epstein... How did he really make his money? He was no financial genius. There are people who testified saying, this guy, I don't know, he sounded like an idiot half the time.
But some people invested money in him. And listen, all of a sudden I realize I'm going to be accused of like just some sort of cover up here. But I'm saying that, you know, I don't care who is exposed. I don't care what party they are. You know, if there has been wrongdoing, they should be investigated. They should be indicted. They should be thrown in jail. I do have some concerns about releasing these files willy-nilly, having victims' names show up, and having names of people who may have just invested with Jeffrey Epstein, because some people, as I understand, did. Having them somehow, you know, being tarred and feathered as a pedophile or something. So, I mean, it seems to me the only fair thing at this point would be to release the files, redact all the victims, redact everybody's name, except for Donald Trump, so he could, because, you know, he said he would release
the
files to get elected.
So I'm with you on that one. Yeah, you go.
We can learn how innocent he is in all of this.
Yes, because his name won't appear at all, right? I mean, because he never had anything to do with it.
Oh, just there's a lot of mentions of John Barron in there, but no Donald Trump.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, we'll see what happens there. I imagine we will be talking about this in September, but we'll find out. Now, among the distractions come up a few times in our conversation here, speaking with Heather Digby Parton and the great Driftglass, the distractions that Trump has been trying to use to sort of toss all of this aside, unsuccessfully so far, it seems to me. Last week, Tulsi Gabbard, his DNI, released documents claiming to prove the existence of this treasonous conspiracy by Barack Hussein Obama, as Trump calls him, and by Hillary Clinton. Following the 2016 election, Trump has piled on. He says we've caught Barack Hussein Obama, accused him of treason and, yes, sedition. But now I've been reading these so-called files, these documents, a lot of coverage of them from both the left and the right, by the way. And I got to say, I still have no clue what they are actually claiming was done here, sedacious or otherwise. I'm wondering if either of you guys have any better clue than I do. Driftglass, I'll start with you.
It doesn't matter. What matters is Barack Obama is back in the news, and Donald Trump is recycling the same language almost word for word he used for the birth certificate thing. It's unbelievable. I had people looking into this, and you wouldn't believe what we. Yeah, of course, we wouldn't believe it because you lie all the time. You're lying about this. It is simply chum for the MAGA base to thrash in to distract from everything else. Because if you look on social media, everyone like iron filings under a magnet are lining up behind. Yeah, we finally got him. Finally, who's going to jail? When is Obama going to jail? Why aren't they locking more people up?
But for what? And, you can't.
Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And what matters is they're talking about it. They have something else to talk about. And you can go in there and have a little fun and say, I thought the Supreme Court said presidents can never be convicted of anything they do. Remember when you guys got that little gift wrap present for your guy? But it doesn't matter. There's nothing there. There is no conspiracy. It's nonsense. And it simply exists as a bright, shiny object to distract from the fact that Donald Trump is covering up a pedophile business that his dead best friend ran with Donald Trump's knowledge, consent, and approval. That's it. That's the only reason this is happening. And it'll be another distraction next week and another one after that if this one doesn't work.
All right. Well, that's because you're just a partisan who hates Donald Trump. Let me go to Digby here for some common
Trump
sense.
Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah, that's what it is. So, Digby, can you explain what the – because now, they've caught him. Hard, whatever it is that he claimed. Do you have any idea what the crime is?
It's kind of hard to sort of sort out because it's crazy as you point out. I think what they're saying is that Obama and his cabal of Trump hitting Trump derangement syndrome during that period between the election and the inauguration in 2016. They decided that they were going to, introduce this investigation to prove without evidence that Russia had manipulated the election in favor of Hillary Clinton, in favor of Donald Trump.
It's all right. It's confusing.
It's confusing.
Strike that, reverse.
That they had attempted to manipulate the election, and that they were going to do it to try and taint Donald Trump's legitimacy. And what they're saying, though, is that Obama and his people, based on some email where they were saying, let's look into this and see what happened with, the voting machines or whatever, that they were saying that the voting machines had been tampered with. That is an absolute lie. They never said that. The Obama people never said that. None of the government ever said that. In fact, there is ample evidence that they went out and said the opposite,
right,
that the election was legitimate, that there was no tampering. They couldn't tamper. Well, you know better than anybody.
Well,
you guys
I know
this
that,
all the time. You
I
know
that. That I was trying to get them to look at that information to determine if the voting machines had been tampered with. Was it possible that it happened?
They didn't, and they never said it had happened. And basically what they said was something that was totally proven. There were court cases. There were people who were indicted. They used their social media and various other things to try and manipulate the voting, the environment to pump up Donald Trump and denigrate Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. That happened.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
It did happen. We know that they also hacked into the DNC, and they had WikiLeaks released the hacked emails. We know what Donald Trump said. Hey, Russia, if you're listening, release the other emails, et cetera, et cetera. We know all that. This is all fact. And by the way, and this is something that drives me crazy about the mainstream media. They're sitting there yesterday or earlier this week sometime. They're sitting there with the president of the Philippines, and they're asking Trump for the first time about a bunch of this stuff. And he's going on and on. He did 8 minutes on this. 8 minutes of Barack Hussein,
right.
Obama,
yeah.
Treason. He's going to go to jail and blah, blah, blah. Not one of the reporters followed up with Marco Rubio, who was sitting right there on the couch,
yep.
right next to Donald
yep.
Trump, who wrote the Senate Intelligence Committee report
yep.
that absolutely, completely repudiated everything that Donald Trump had just said.
Yep.
And Marco Rubio is the guy who signed that. He was the chairman, and he did it. And nobody asked him about it, and he was right there.
And he does.
And that,
report, that Senate report, does the best job of
yes.
disputing these actual claims that Donald Trump is making, whatever they may be.
Absolutely. So there's nothing there in reality. It's exactly what Drift says. It's so transparent. I'm surprised. I mean, he even came out. He went and he was giving some speech to the Republicans. He said, look, every time, I mean, he's basically telling them, these are the talking points, guys. Whenever they start talking about Epstein, you don't want to talk about that. Start talking about how Obama stole the election. I'm just going, really?
Yeah.
We just went there. I thought the big lie was that Biden stole the election. Now we're going back to Obama stealing the election, which, by the way, dude, you won.
Right.
You idiot. It. You won the damn thing. So what are you talking about?
Well,
he's a little confused.
It does make me wonder, that if he's going back to these old recycled bits, that, he's getting backed into a corner. What will he do next? What kind of stunts and countermeasures will he toss out? How much nuttier is this all going to get?
Bill, you got
a thought?
I don't
think there's any limit.
Well,
I think the limit of lunacy is just, it's infinite.
I got to get to a quick break here, but Bill, you got a thought on that?
You notice that Trump never says Russia. He says Russia, Russia, Russia.
Right.
And why is that? Because it's a key word. It's a winter soldier code word
yes.
to wipe their memory and reset them on a different conspiracy. They're trained Burisma. My wife has a theory that everyone has
Benghazi.
Benghazi, Burisma, Russia, Russia, Russia. That's they've all been trained like Pavlov's little dogs to jump up and drool every time they hear that. So every time they hear it, doesn't matter that it happened 10 years ago and it was a lie. These people have extremely accurate memories of stuff that never happened. And he just pushes a button and they all go, oh, that's right. Russia, Russia, Russia. And that's all you hear for the next 3 days. And the way you push through that is say, that's all very interesting. What about Jeffrey Epstein and the files he promised you? And why is Donald Trump lying about that and covering that up? Maybe you can answer that for me. A noun, a verb, Epstein files from now until the crack of doom.
Yeah, you're right.
You really.
And by the way, let's not forget who is the one who released this little report. Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah. Tulsi.
And her Gabbard, whole history there is its own conspiracy.
It is.
Which
all right, quick break. I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna talk about what happened with Stephen Colbert, which is kind of amazing in a bunch of ways. And I want to talk about Trump as what I have described as a wannabe dictator, but I received some email this week saying I am wrong about that. I will explain all of that with Heather Digby Parton and Driftglass and, of course, Desi Doyen. Sticking with us for the balance of the hour, I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast. Don't touch that dial.
Thought five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
I wish I could say it would all be all right.
It'll all be all right.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you.
I wish I could too. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We've got roundtable coverage of a whole bunch of ridiculous stuff today with our friends Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Hullabaloo and Driftglass of the Pro Left podcast. All right, since we last spoke, guys, another thing has happened. CBS News owner Paramount agreed to settle a ridiculous lawsuit with Donald Trump over an interview that Trump did not like on 60 Minutes with Kamala Harris last year. They've agreed to settle for $16 million at least. It has since been reported by Donald Trump that he will also be receiving about $20 million more in advertisements from this new company that a company named Skydance is purchasing Paramount CBS. And they wanted to do this because they need Trump's approval for this merger to go through at the FCC. Days later, after the settlement came to light, it was announced that CBS was forever canceling The Late Show with Stephen Colbert after next season, despite the fact that it is the top-rated show in late-night television. Stephen Colbert had this to say as just part of his response to all of this on Monday night.
On Friday, Donald Trump posted, "I absolutely love that Colbert got fired. His talent was even less than his ratings." How dare you, sir? Would an untalented man be able to compose the following satirical witticism? Go f*** yourself.
Digby, I know that you wrote about all of this madness today over at Salon, but what is your very general takeaway from this and from what has happened here and what's playing out?
Well, just, the big overview here is that, all these institutions have been caving, whether it's big law firms, universities, across the board, and these big media companies who are settling, settling with Donald Trump on these ridiculous, bogus lawsuits, paying him money, basically, paying bribes to him to get what they want, whether it's to leave them alone, or in the case of this one with Paramount and Skydance, which is the company that's buying Paramount, I guess. Mm-hmm. They had at stake, had this big, merger approval at stake. And so Trump sued them. It was a very bogus lawsuit that nobody in the world thought that he could possibly win. They paid him the $16 million. And then Skydance, apparently Skydance may be what's behind the Colbert firing and behind this other thing that Trump came up with just this week, which is that they've also pledged another $20 million or more in PSAs and some advertising for conservative causes. And we don't really know what that's about because we haven't really heard anybody sort of validate that, but Trump came out and said it.
Right.
Now, CBS and Paramount said that they did not fire Colbert because of Trump. They did it because for financial reasons that the show was losing a lot of money, even though it was the top rated show, and that they just decided to do it. I'm sorry, the fact that it happened within days of the settlement, if it wasn't part of the settlement, which, very well could be, whether it was on Skydance or Paramount side, or if they just decided to throw it in as a little treat for Trump, just to, kind of make him happy. Either way, It's a horrible thing. And it's happening throughout our culture.
Yeah.
That we are seeing these big institutions that have the clout and the power. It's corporations who are bowing down to these DEI edicts that they, you know, will sue you for civil rights violations if you don't get rid of your DEI policies, to universities and these bogus claims of anti-Semitism. Across the board, this is happening, and they're all failing. And so to me, you had Colbert this week, and he's up there, you know, saying go F yourself to Trump on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And all these other late night guys showed up at his show in an act of solidarity and basically stood behind him. And so my feeling was, is that all we've got, none of the universities, the corporations, the media companies, none of them are worth a damn. All we've got are the comedians.
Which
these are good, the only people who have what it takes to speak truth to power in our whole damn culture. And that is a pathetic sort of realization. I mean, good for them, but, you know, kind of sad, really.
Which kind of takes me to the next topic I want to get to. But let me get Driftglass in on this first. And by the way, if it's a 60, I think Paramount has said that they, or CBS has said, they're losing $40 million a year late night. Well, $16 billion paid to Donald Trump plus plus another $20 million in ads. That brings us up to 36. That's damn near the amount they claim they are losing in late night each year that they just gave away to Donald Trump for some reason. Driftglass, if you were Skydance Paramount here, would you have confidence that even after what seems clearly to be a bribe from Paramount to Trump and the firing of Trump critic Colbert, would you have any confidence at this point, even after all of that, that Trump's FCC will actually approve this merger? Does anything prevent him from demanding more in order to give that final approval?
Well, if I were Skynet, I'd know what I'd do next, which is, you know, nuke the whole thing and start over. But I'm not. I'm merely Skydance.
A deep cut reference to RoboCop.
Terminator.
Thank you. You're right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We all got it. Okay, we got it.
Thank you. Yeah, because we're old. We're old. And actually, that's kind of the point. That's kind of the point, which is the entire, as I understand it, I'm not an expert, is the late night universe is simply aging out of profitability. All of it. It doesn't matter if you're the most popular by, you know, 100% more than the next guy. They're just losing money. Now, networks used to have enterprises that lost money that they were proud of, and it was called the news. And the news used to, you expected it to lose money because it was a public service. And I quite agree with Digby. The only public service left in the media that does truth-telling are the comedians. Now, I think there's kind of a synergy here because they got to write off what is probably going to continue to be an increasingly losing proposition because young people do not watch late night television. And they got to have a pot sweetener with Donald Trump. Give him something for free. Give him a little gift wrap thing. That little orb that he used to have, you know, overseas. They give him the version of that. On the other hand, they should take a lesson from Lisa Murkowski about how well Republicans keep their word after they ink a deal, because there's no Donald Trump has no history of keeping his word about anything.
Yeah.
So I think it's folly. But these are massive corporations for whom public service and delivering the news and being, you know, good public citizens is entirely secondary to their profit motive.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even come up in the conversation. It's just, well, you know, Colbert's losing money. If we get rid of him, getting rid of him now is insane. That's the part I don't get. You're giving the guy a megaphone for 10 months to say whatever he wants on the air. And if the ratings are going to go up. That's all I'm going to say.
And he's been fantastic since this happened, better than ever. And he's got to have a year to do this unleashed at this point. By the way, CBS, of all places, CBS, Bill Paley, the Tiffany Network, they lost money. News was a loss leader from the beginning, and yet CBS News was the jewel of the Tiffany Network. They knew they lost money, but it brought viewers to everything else.
And they still have their evening news, which I assume is still a loss leader.
But it is a loss leader.
But they're not getting rid of that.
Well, we'll see. All right. I received an interesting note, and I've had some interesting follow-up discussion ever since on this over the past few days with Kenny, a regular reader of the Brad blog, who responded to my posting of our broadcast on Monday on actually some of these topics regarding Trump's assault on free speech, and in particular the free press, his attacks on media outlets from, at this point, left to right, private to public, defunding NPR and PBS, shutting down the Voice of America and its sister stations around the globe, the ridiculous lawsuits and settlements with ABC News, CBS News, and now his lawsuit against Rupert Murdoch and Wall Street Journal, of all things, following their reporting on the Wonderful Secrets birthday card that is said to have been sent by Donald Trump to Jeffrey Epstein. Well, Kenny wrote in response to my posting of that show and my description in it of Trump as a, quote, wannabe dictator. He writes, Brad, your blog continues to be excellent, on point, needed, etc. But why do you say wannabe? Isn't he a dictator president already? He gets every major thing he wants. His so-called losses are minor and often temporary, and the other two branches are subservient. He says, do something, and people in power do it, and the Supreme Court has declared that by law, he is above the law. You can't really say, we have rule of law. What would make you drop the wannabe and just say dictator? He says, I can't understand pundits saying that he's getting weaker. That's akin to the stuff about Putin getting weaker when Prigozhin marched on Moscow. If that is getting weaker, I'd hate to see it getting stronger. But even if true, and we might get out of this within a few years, it doesn't change the current status. Just me, he says, but I think it's time we face it. We live in a dictatorship at the moment. Thank you for great reporting analysis, Kenny. Now, I don't believe that he was describing me as claiming that Trump was getting weaker, but that other folks, I guess, on the left were doing so. In any event, as I responded to him, I think he makes some very solid points there. But, well, before I share my general response, I wonder about yours. Is he right? Is the time to describe Trump as a wannabe dictator over now? Do we live in a full-on dictatorship at this point as you see it? And are we pulling punch? Am I pulling punches by not describing him as such in this moment? Heather, your thoughts?
I kind of go with Kenny on this. I think it is happening, and I'll just tell you this. This just came down as we're sitting here taping this. The Supreme Court has just in another 6-3 vote on mm-hmm. the shadow docket, let mm-hmm. Trump fire the Democratic members of the Consumer Product Safety Commission mm-hmm. who are protected against removal by statute. This is happening over and over and over again. And it's happening because the Supreme Court, which is the only institution that actually has the Congress has the power to stop him. The Supreme Court has the power to stop him. They are not doing that. If anything, they are enabling him. So is it a permanent dictatorship? We won't know that until we see what happens with elections, which is that's your field there, Brad. And,
well,
you know,
and it's
I'll let you run with
Well, it's one of the reasons why I say he's wannabe dictator, because dictators don't generally, have elections that remove them from power in a year or two.
Yeah, that remove them from power. I think that's really, you got to sort of add that in there, because, you know, Viktor Orban, Erdogan, Putin, these people have elections. They're sort of elections. They're not, mm-hmm. nothing we would recognize, but they do it. And, there's a pretense there that there is some kind of democratic system. We will see. But the way that the government is operating right now, it is operating as a dictatorship and temporary or not.
Driftglass?
Yeah, that's very well put. It's there's the dictatorship of the proletariat. There's all kinds of dictatorships. This does remind me of when people were fiddling around with the word fascist. Is he a proto-fascist? No, he's a fascist. And coming up with an accurate definition of what's happening right now is important, because it gives us a place to stand and start. Once the Roman Republic fell, it was a dictatorship. There were lots of different types of dictators. There was a great deal of push to restore the Republic, and it never happened. By the time Claudius came around, he was the only one who wanted to restore the Republic. Nobody cared, because everybody forgot what it was, and nobody gave a damn. So we are on the first few chapters of a dictatorship. Who will inherit that power after Trump is gone is an open question. Whether or not, if we just take back the House or the House and the Senate, that could be stopped. Is that a dictatorship? But it really is. We do live in, for all practical purposes, a one-party totalitarian state run by a dictator. And the dictator is Donald Trump. The fact that he was popularly elected doesn't matter, because his dictates are the ones that rule the day. He can tell Mike Johnson to shut the Congress down, and he does that. He can tell the Supreme Court do this, and they do it. So, yeah, by almost by definition, we are living in a form of dictatorship, and that is, that should break everyone's heart.
You, like Digby, like Kenny, I think all make excellent points. The only thing that makes the only reason I pull that particular punch is because, yes, Democrats can come to power next year and stop him, at least to some respect, that there are protests going on every day on the street. We don't generally see protests like that in dictatorships. Stephen Colbert is still on the air for another year. We're still on the air for another year. I know that Donald Trump would like to prevent all of that from happening, and he might. But to me, as I said to Kenny, it feels like giving him a gift by rolling over and saying, yeah, you're a dictator now. He wants to be. I think it's our job to stop that from happening. And once you decide he's a dictator, or then you know, I feel like, well, what do you have to wake up for the next day? It's over at that point. But that said, you all may be right, and Kenny may be right, and I may be wrong. I think that remains to be seen, and I think it's an interesting discussion that we will continue to have. And by the way, if you're listening, if you'd like to give me your thoughts on that idea or anything else, drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. I read them all. I respond to many. Would love to hear from you. Guys, you are great as always. I do have to get out. As always, never enough time. Heather Digby Parton. You can find her work at salon.com and digbysblog.net. You can also find her on the Blue Skies at digby56. Driftglass can be found on the Blue Skies at simply Driftglass, and you can and should listen to his podcast, the Pro Left Podcast, at proleftpod.com. I think that's it, everybody. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having me.
A delight to have you both here. We'll do it again soon, I suspect. Okay, it is also a delight to have you here, Desi Doyen.
Oh, well, thanks for saying so.
Our producer, and a delight to have all of you out there in Radioland listening along with us today. It's always an honor. It's always a pleasure. If you missed any portion of today's show or you want to give it another listen or share it with someone you know, love, or hate, well, you know what to do. You can go right over to bradblog.com, where today's show will be posted for free, no paywall there ever. At least I hope, thanks to those of you who hit a donate button to help us stay on your public airwaves to do whatever it is we do every day over those public airwaves. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate. You can also, as I noted, drop me an email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. Always good to hear from listeners. And you can find, follow, and share me and say whatever you like about me over at The Blue Skies as well, where you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.